Blog Talk Radio.
Found Masonic effects. We're not here to try and jar you awake. Enjoy that slumber that you're in while you can. My goodness. Nothing lasts forever. We'll move on. You'll move on. Welcome back, listeners from all over the place. And whether you're old or new, pulling a chair up to the table with us. It's a pleasure to have you here. It's always a pleasure when we get to share ideas and to listen to ourselves and try to make sense out of what's going on around us. Even though there's a lot of very stern people that act as if those types of questions are completely irrelevant, you know, and then far from it. It really depends on the moment and when we come together, we're trying to encourage that exchange of ideas. We start off easy. We start off with that sense of anticipation that we know that, you know, we know a little bit about the background of the speaker or the speakers, and we're just, we're anticipating. It's, we don't have to make it bleak all the time, but there are, you know, there are some fundamentals that we ought to, you know, pay some attention. We might act very bold about our sense of, our act with resolve, but we always know that there's a great deal of pain around in the world, and If we think about it, it's one of those tasks, a nasty little tasks that we that might overwhelm us, but we continue to fight. We continue to put ourselves in the line of danger because we believe in some fundamental freedoms and the liberty of the human spirit and things like that. But, oh my goodness, who wants to talk about that when we get together? Well, who would be a wholesome person struggling for a better life if they weren't in some way, even the in their periphery vision, have a sense of the degradation that happens? Part of understanding that the philosophers have handed to us. We're not told that, we're ever encouraged that. If Epicurean, we'll have a sense that you're moving with this notion for some reasons. Even the Buddha, you know, we living fine in his father's castle, all protected from, sheltered for deliberately from the ugliness of the outside world, the hunger and poverty around. Until, as a young man, he left on his sojourn, and my goodness, what did he see? Even through the curtains of his carriage, it was undeniable. He was living in privilege, and other and so many others were not. And we know that this had an. We're taught that this had an impact on this impressionable young mind, even though he had been sheltered from the pains, and by understanding the pains, found what we've came to understand as enlightenment, awareness. Does it weigh heavily? I think the weight, it never lessens. It's until it's gone. But how we deal with that, how we deal with that, do we use these things like some as a motivation to roll up our sleeves and do something about it? Do something about it. Or do we just acknowledge it and think, well, that's not my job. You know, that's not my place. Nobody's going to make me. You know, well, yeah, we have this thing called conscience and awareness. But what do you do? What do you do if you happen to be one of those people that I think is fortunate enough to understand, to have the capacity that they don't, we don't throw our hands. It's not a jazz hands moment. Oh my goodness, there's ugliness in the world. Or oh my goodness, we have a political narrative out of necessity. This is not gamesmanship. It's a conversation that needs to be ongoing because it's necessary for our democracies to deal with the marketplace. And when we look at it candidly, it's not pretty. It's not confected. It's not the result of those nine psychologists that are reshaping every idea, collecting data about us so that our attitudes can be influenced. It's not that. It's the individual. It's agency. It's simply acknowledging you and I have agency. Huh. Well, even now I want to turn to a dictionary. Yeah, I know I have a sense and have talked about agency in the past, but there's times when I do need to reflect on it. And your music and your poetry helps me do that. It helps take me out of the, if I'm thinking in a single lane, I find that's troubling in some ways. Because I do tend to wonder what I'm leaving behind and, you know, and context. And context very much shapes for me and for many, it shapes our emotional connection with ideas. We are the product of awareness of these sensations, these phenomena. Enough, you know, that we package it, put it together, and it fits this description of reality for us. But still, we can be puzzled by some sort of, I don't know, miracles. I think of the stories of the color red and this phenomena. How does your brain, remember where we started from, you little bags of stardust, eh? how do we understand? I look at the screen and say, my goodness, you know, it's bordered in red. And you come along and say, oh, yeah, it's bordered in red. How does your mind and my mind make that connection? That sensation we're taught is red, and so from there on that's what it is, a word with a particular meaning. But then what if we change the word? What if we change the meaning? Is it still red? You know, you get the flow of that. there's a time and a place for that kind of conversation. And don't, not when you're handing me my measure. No, that's not the time. That's not the time. That's the time when do have that coming together. It's goodwill. We're going to be talking. I always, talk out loud about things that have sheltered, it's ideas that come and test. You want to test them because it's not, I don't think anymore it's doing it for the sake of doing it. I'm not, no longer, I wish I was the dilettante student where you could just need to push and be stretched because you're talking to your professor who is light years more prepared and has been sitting there encouraging you to challenge, to think. There, it's like for the professor, it's like, aha, the gotcha moment. And it happens, when you bundle yourself up and you say, well, this is what I've been trained to do, and so I'm going to reflect as that kind of persona in your experience. Bundle up, pull together all of their energy, and then you see the coming to terms with art, the way they articulate an idea. And then we wonder the motivation, and we try to draw that out. And when that happens in a large room, it is quite comfortable because some of us, you feel that the need to participate when you're asked, or not. You can, in a large group, it's comfortable. You can sit back and be quite comfortable. Aude vide taxe. What in the world do you learn when you assume that, when you listen more than you speak? This is the mysteries. And today is, I'd like to think, people, there are some that will say, well, it's a bleak kind of an existence, are we really making progress? Well, I don't think we've got to the point where we can even ask that kind of question. What we're dealing with, I think we could agree, is a tremendously dynamic. And with some of my dear friends, we're talking about the world being in vibration. And when we begin to understand what that means, it's quite profound. I don't even know if that does. You begin to have thoughts that push our vocabularies. How do we explain it? When black and white becomes nuanced, when becomes shades of gray, when we can see. We can understand contradictions to our own thinking and to the thinking of others. It does funny things to our judgment, funny things about our sense, our ethics. Is there one response that's appropriate in all situations? If there is, I have yet found it. It's the reasoning that makes us a better person because we get to examine our own thoughts when we're explaining ourselves, whether we held ourselves accountable. I love it. How many decades has it been? You're discovering, what's this world of objectivity like, and can we really achieve that sense? From a subjective platform, and to go near a student pub, any of you, go wherever you are. If you're if you see the people leaning in over their tea, the discussions are uncannily similar to your student days. It's like learning to walk. It's like learning to walk, and we all need to do that one at a time. There, like, everything passes. All the professionalism I could conjure up out the window in a second. You pick up on the idea that I'm talking to you about. Of course you do. Last night, I was sitting next to a young man. Turns out he's an architect. And it turns out he's from Chile. And as we were talking, he became more and more excited about the conversation. And can you imagine coincidence that we happen to be, you know, we're seated next to one another at a banquet, but the keenness, just to, like, if there was something there, he had a story and he needed to express it. It's like you. You tune in, whether you're those beautiful people in New Zealand or these, how do I describe the dignities that Japan has brought to the world? Whether it's that moment of very, very interesting reflection that or is it the curiosity of Masonry in Exile in China, or Oman, or Ireland? It, variations, huh? Like, we could agree that red is red. We seem to be able to agree, like-minded, on a discussion of a legitimate discussion about liberty and freedoms. If I had that discussion once, like the one we have about virtue, living a virtuous life, yes, all that Aristotelian stuff, and learning to live, learning what that means. And taking the time to, once you understand in your own way a meaning for that, beginning to question, if I apply this, does it really, is this access to the good life? It doesn't, it means that we rebuild these ideas. We are builders. We're constructing reactions, and we know that as Masons, how much we have to learn from the threads of a genius that went before us and wrote about our dilemma. A little test. There's some of these, you know, pick a good, your favorite search engine. I particularly am fond of Petrie Stone. It's just so lovely. Or the thinkers at Ars Quattro Coronat. I just love the work because it's so stimulating. And put your question to them. And do not be too surprised if the search engine produces a list of documents on that specific question. And if not on the specific, we'll give you that skin. You know, you have your own unique perspective. You'll find similarity that I find is. I find it uncanny. It's like when I'm connecting with you, and red is red. I can't explain how I see red the same as you. We're two individual people, unless it has something to do with a level of learning that we don't like to care to admit. That, you know, how do you pass on learning genetically? Is that what we're saying? Well, that is what we're saying. That is what we've been saying for a long time. Does the in that level of living and reality, you know, we can say, is there a truth to mathematics? It seems odd to add that kind of a question. It's mathematics. It's like calculus. There it is. But is there is there a lane? Well, it teaches us, we're taught, a respect for contravening forces and how, you know, these different forces, even if we're looking at an atom, how they perform this dance of existence, and how, in the language we use, it would be opposition, we can see balance. It's like certain note structures that resolve a phrase that's soothing to us. Certain keys on the keyboard are more conducive to an emotional state. Well, you look at this and notice the keys in which some of your favorite operas are written or your favorite symphony. And just take a look at the reasoning and what certain keys do. That's a language all to its own. And of course, you know, I'll draw a clumsy and awkward parallel to things Masonic. I think Masonry more is a basin that has as a pinnacle. It's a basin that, after, you know, all of the rains of ideas filter through all of the purifying sands and clays, that Masonry is this basin, and we can sip from it. We can sip from it. That's kind of a nice illusion. In Ponce de Leon, the Fountain of Youth, I guess, the discovering immortality. We're not what may outlive me, the deeds that I've performed, and not whether I get a parade if I'm felled in tragedy in my field. Then you don't give parades. And the heroism that happens every single hour of every single day goes unnoticed. You know, it's just part of the job, unless it's happening with men. Funny that, isn't it? We have a lot to make us smile, if we get good at it, we'll begin to be quite smug at times and talk with a sense of irony about what's going on around us. But we can do that with people that get it. Some people never will, and that's fine. That's a point I'm making. We if we move away from the sense that anything coming through Washington, my brain is either good or bad, and just examine it for what it is, even that's a task. But what happens if you blend these ideas? You know, sit in here, open up your own laboratory. You don't have to. You can turn the lights on. We're not going to tell. But what happens if you mix things? You know, you've been cautioned. If you mix these things together, it could explode. Poof. There. Did you find the truth in it? Well, we just like to make explosions. See, so if we can trust this, the more we trust, careful. Careful. But right now, I need a little bit of a brain cleanse or a reset of the mind. And what better than to enlist the spirit of Pythagoras again? Help us here. We need the harmony of the universe brought to us. Oh, there I go. it seems that we've teed up some music. Imagine that. We have a good show today, really. I think you're going to like it. Let's get on with it. can pull back. We can pull back to a point where we aren't going to be affected emotionally by what's going on and what we're thinking about. We can do that. And then sit perched and observe what's going on around us. But we're always a part of that, aren't we? Here. Our struggle is we're looking at understanding the idea that explains us as if some other connection, if we can share responsibility for ourselves, what's going on around us. Wasn't it the Reformation that made that point, that we are ultimately responsible for ourselves, not some higher power to explain away the situation I'm in or you're in, but the reality of it? And perhaps we are not always able to understand. I think that's because there's a lot to take in. So we create those motifs. We create the stereotypes to help us to, and we find ourselves, moving towards certain atmospheres, whether it's the conversation or the art on your walls, things that draw you and me out, the exchange of ideas. What is the artist doing with that painting? And what effect, to actually sit there and go through the hurly-burly of your day and sit and put down your guard and let the painting speak to you in the effect. Does it make you angry? Does it challenge you? Is it a story? What is she sitting at the table looking through the window? What is she looking at? And what time of day is it? The light, it's just coming in a certain angle. The use of Masonic geometry. Here's my commentary for today. Yeah, I need help with this one. We are a community that has endured for longer than we can measure. We have a strength not built on numbers, but on a continued sense of unity. This might be the angst experienced by Grand Lodge representatives, how to influence growth, how to influence depth, how to enter the minds of men to examine what motivates and inspires. The answers to these reasonable questions are murky. Put all our finest philosophical minds in one room and they would show us consensus is not an outcome but a process. We will always question and reason. It's what we do. Skeptic. Science. Best answers are temporary, evasive, situational. Without preamble or discourse on how they were reached, they fall somewhere between opinion and popularity. Been this way because we know there is truth to it. And the more we respect diversity, we hope out of that, men will take responsibility for consensus building. Oh, the cathedrals? It's a wonderful metaphor, remember? And if you've studied a bit about mind palaces, you conjure up a cathedral and then you deposit certain ideas and sequences of ideas in each of the rooms. And then when we go back in our mind to the room, we can find what we've left there. Somewhere between opinion and popularity. The truth? Oh, we're a fool if it's there and we ignore it. And the more we respect diversity, we hope out of that men will take responsibility for consensus building. We don't impose that. An autocrat or a fool, no sense talking to them. Those that do find the capacity for creating consensus, those are our legends. Those who aren't have questions to ask and answers to debate. Let's see a lodge membership all read Scottish Masonic history. We might not assume that they all have the same reaction, but would they have a framework on which to build? But to build what? I think they would invest in creating atmosphere conducive to their collective sense of masonry. Scottish culture tends to stabilize anxieties. It's a story of integrity and authenticity. It's one of a number of cities around the world that are capable with that capability. Edinburgh, yeah. Some men reach back to understand their cultural roots. Others focus on survival and moving forward. Is there a right or a wrong to this? But put a small group of like-minded people together and they have a different potential. Even though Masonry, an overarching community, even through it, it is thousands of smaller cultures tied to tile lodges that we never see. Is the conversation informed? How does harmonics and the common good play out? As projects in progress, in process, that's how it plays out. They're projects, ongoing. It's like a life, eh? Take nothing for granted. Everything in moderation and respect the body of knowledge. So mote it be. Thank you. That's, I'm sorry. Miles Davis meets Thelonious Monk. Yeah, I'm sorry. You deserve just to be absorbed by that. But I'm going to try and absorb you with something else. We've been talking, you remember, we've been talking about the presence of nationalism, the intrusion of ideas, this, including the truth, been played out. It's being described in the form of a gender breakdown. Now, I think there's a truth in it, that an idea. I don't know myself that, and I'm searching for another explanation. I don't know that an idea has gender. I don't know that mathematics is affected by gender, or that science, that the objectivity is affected by gender. You may have your own opinion about that. I don't know that. And we're talking here, we have been talking about women in bringing women into the craft. And I don't think it's just, you know, it's talking, I remember years ago, I was talking to one fellow about this, of why don't we do that? I was thinking more in terms of a moral level anyway, his response was a bit depressing. It had to do with, you know, the entrance to a lodge and displaying the breast. I don't know. I'm afraid I don't giggle like a schoolboy anymore. That was depressing. Such as, you know, someone left the West Gate unlocked, didn't they? Yeah, maybe it's Fra Lippo Lippi that's coming back from his bacchanalia and trying to get in before curfew, before the day starts again. Here, I want you to listen to this. This is a passage. We don't let this one go easily. And it's not here to preach. And if you're getting your back up, you might want to re-examine a few things. Like, where's you have emotional investment in this, do you? So much for objectivity. Huh? Or do you have you have that certainty of right and wrong? Well, good luck with that. But for those that aren't so consumed with trying to stay within the lanes of this and are exploring some of their own biases and prejudices here. Listen to what Jacob says about this. And it's not that she's definitive, but she's making a point for us here. And it'll become clear here. There's controversy as usual. You know, you ought not to do that. No, they don't belong. And all about the question of the influence of British masonry in the Hague, or I like to think vice versa. Without mentioning masonry by name, the Abbe Croyer's attack makes specific reference to Captain Mitchell and ses frères, to the French origin of their frivolity, to their interest in mathematics, and then quite pointedly, to what he calls the courtesans in their midst. The thrust of the attack centers on the forms of socialization adopted by this coterie, on their imitation of aristocratic manners, while at the same time valuing merit, not birth, among themselves. Indeed, the Abbe argues, they have taken elegance of manners to the point of a religion, and in their temple, while despising all other religions, they worship the sun and the moon. They have prohibited polygamy, but in fact they practice it. And in the process, they have made it possible for members of the, quote, inferior sex, quote, to lose their virtue with decency. Croyer never mentions Freemasonry by name, so we cannot be sure that the angry abbe had la loge du juste firmly in mind when he penned this attack, but it seems a distinct possibility. Certainly the description he gives fits quite neatly, and he was in The Hague in this period. Not least, he did know one prominent French Freemason, the Chevalier Ramsay. Predictably, on the other, many innovative customs adopted by the Lodge or by some similarly egalitarian group of brothers, the mixing of sexes on an equal footing, even more than the apparent religion, gave Croyer the greatest offense. The question then, the question for us, can we entertain this question of gender and the practices of our small social group? Can we, or are we, is it possible for us to separate the whatever we think it distinguishes a man from a woman and hold that in the back of our mind and see ideas on their own merit? In other words, are we capable of not giving a fig whether our prejudice is at play? That we have a discovery. Do you care whether it was one of the brilliant scientists that had been reproached because she was a woman? I think about the disgraceful, the embarrassment of Madame Curie, the Nobel Prizes in the universities. That's on us. That's on us. We feel we'll just sweep that one under the carpet again, you know, another embarrassment. Or, my goodness, if women show their hair, it could trigger all kinds of menacing behavior in men. So those darn women, let's have them wrap up, cover up. Are we capable? We might be distracted by having this ongoing kind of an argument, but why ongoing? Is it that there's an ugly truth that we're not capable of holding our bias in abeyance? I think that's just despicable. It's reprehensible to be saying that about us. And it well may be. I could be a get up on my exude every element of piety I can possibly conjure. And then so what? Look in the mirror. Is this, you know, it's ugly. I'm sorry, my mirror is not gilded. My mirror is crowded out by shelters for women and their babies because some man has beaten them. And I can't ignore the stench of war, even the wars from so long ago, the stench is still in the air. Conscience. And the poverty, hunger going on around me, well, let's pretend that it doesn't exist. Let's focus on some other conjured calamity. Let's play this metaphor out in the sports field. It's easier than ignoring the father going home from the food bank where there wasn't enough. Shelves were bare. That's happening across the country where I am. And, oh, my goodness, we can say we're quite privileged. Well, privileged to have a conscience and privileged to have the freedom to realize that the system is incomplete and we ought not to, we have to decide if we're going to be able to leave people behind. Oh, those bloody old people, what do they contribute? And who cares that they contributed to and financed the growing infrastructure? Who cares? What have they done lately? Parasites. You know, capitalist dream, man. Yeah. Where do we go from here? Onward and upward. Seems to fit. Here, around this time of year, I like to indulge in bringing up memories of literary figures that were in their day a bit controversial. Well, I think of all of the people that I tend to follow, and perhaps you do too. Beethoven was unconventional. Mozart was tweaking the nose of the elite. Bartok was doing things that had never been done before, collecting all that folk music and then working with the themes. Where do you begin? Do we revere Vincent and his work? Yeah, we do. It was unconventional. Just a crazy man. And those despicable impressionists, you know, why don't they just go along with the rules, for God's sakes? It's so troublesome. Oh, to have that simplified world where whatever I think is the way life is. Yeah. Wilde, Oscar Wilde, an interesting man, an Irishman. When I read through this, I think, oh, there's a reason. He was born, he had literary parents. His father was one of Ireland's leading ear and eye surgeons, and he published books on archaeology and folklore and on Jonathan Swift, the satirist. Interesting work. And his mom wrote under the name Speranza. You know, she's described as a revolutionary poet and an authority on Celtic myth and folklore. Bright people, intelligent people. And he went through, while he was a bright kid, he went through different scholarships and took him to Trinity College in Dublin, still a magnificent facility, and the Magdalen College at Oxford. And Oxford awarded him a degree with honors. And he distinguished himself not only as a classical scholar and a wit, but as a poet. And he won this coveted poetry prize, the Newdigate Prize of 1878, with a long poem. We're not going to get into it, but I ought to. It's called Ravenna. He was deeply impressed by the teachings of two writers, particularly John Ruskin and Walter Pater. They were talking about the central importance of art in life, and particularly by the stress on the aesthetic intensity by which life should be lived. You know, live flamboyantly is basically what Steve is. The influence of many, he was a product of his generation, and he liked that Pater, you know, Walter Pater was urging to burn away with, quote, a hard gem-like flame. But Wilde also was quite happy affecting an aesthetic pose. You know, that pretentiousness, you know, look at me, here I am all foppy and bisexual. And this combined with rooms at Oxford decorated with objects d'art, you know, you walked in and it was like this little museum. And so it resulted in, this is a quote, oh, would that I could live up to my blue china. Remember that? The aesthetic, you know, comparing yourself to this beautiful china that he ate from. The 1880s, when aestheticism was the rage and despair of literary London, Wilde established himself in social and artistic circles by his wit and flamboyance. And soon, you remember, I don't know if he, do you remember Punch, the periodical? It made him a satiric object of its antagonism to the aesthetes. You know, let's pick on we need something to personify and attack. So let's go after Wilde. Man. He faced a lot, but there's a time he went to the United States. He traveled into the United States and he started off doing a lecture tour. It started off just abysmal. It's just awful, awful, awful. And he was ridiculed. He's just, you know, the first lecture in New York, it was entitled The English Renaissance. It just bombed. The audience didn't like his accent, couldn't understand the Irish accent. And they were bored because he was rambling a bit. It went on and on. And then he gave talks at Yale and Harvard. They were done with so much mockery. The students just mocked him. And they dressed up in this, you know, wild, in his same clothes, knee breeches and silk stockings and patent shoes. And they danced around the theater as the audience cheered them and laughed. And the press coverage was unrelenting. This is the guy that we're going to be reading today. The guy came in, he was, you know, confident, and he began to fail. By a couple of months in, he was a wreck. And at one point, he collapsed on stage from exhaustion and the stress. Yeah. And he was drinking, you know, the elixir that cured everything, from post-traumatic stress to depression, booze, and some other little concoction. But the attacks, you know, being fans of social media, the attacks were aimed at were very personal. It's like the general attacks on women and our women politicians. We tolerate that here in Canada. But as he left, when he returned, he left defeated. But when he returned, by 1892, he was London's leading theatrical phenomena. Yeah. He was influential. And we forget that today because it's convenient for us. We don't want to build that up too much. Here. Tell me what you get from this. Tell me what you pick from this. This is his sonnet. I just like the format because we get to compare with other poets that write sonnet. Here. Tell me about the intent of this. He admits in this, this is called Liberty, yeah? Sonnet to Liberty. He admits that he does not like Liberty's children, like the politicians. He's not a big fan. Amen. All of a sudden, I like him. Eh? And then he says that Liberty mirrors his own passions and rages. He's digging into it a bit. And he expresses an appreciation for the Liberty. And the alternative monarchy, but in the lines 12 and 14, he qualifies his identification with the Liberty, acknowledging his sorrow over soldiers who die defending liberty. And in the language he uses, we get a sense of his excitement and spiritedness. But there is a line, he refers to thy children. So the context makes it clear that these Christs are the soldiers who die upon the barricades in order to save liberty. That's the kind of guy we're talking about. Tell me about the poet's overall intent. Is it enthusiasm or uncertainty or outrage? And who is he speaking to? Is he speaking to himself? Is he speaking to great architect, to God, or the reader, you and I, or to, is he speaking to liberty itself or his country? Not that I love thy children, whose dull eyes see nothing save their own unlovely woe, whose minds know nothing and nothing care to know, but that the roar of thy democracies, thy reigns of terror, thy great anarchies mirror my wildest passions like the sea, and give my rage a brother, liberty. For this sake, only do thy dissonant cries delight my discreet soul. Else might all kings by bloodied out or treacherous cannonades, rob nations of their rights in violent. And I remain unmoved, and yet, these Christs that die upon the barricades, God knows it, I am with them in some things. November. It's a time when we pause in the midst of battles going on, murders. Soldiers die. Eh? The poets help us to come to terms. God bless them. If we're fortunate, and I think a lot of us are, we find beauty and love around us. We're being taught, this Freemasons group, we're being taught to find truth and a way of not the salacious love that we often think about, it's marketed to us today, but a deeper, more profound kind of love and respect for our fellows. And it does become, we practice it with each other, you know that we learn it with each other, and then we practice it in the real world, as if our lodges are artificial. Well, our lodges are sanctuary. Thank goodness. And look at us now. We're just awash in this ocean of ideas. And we are exploring. And all these explorers around me moving on in their own way. And some say, well, you know, I need that inspiration that you feel. Well, you know, I want to be part of that too. Yeah, fabulous. So we introduce one another. You introduce me to your thinking, to your ideas, and I benefit from that and from him and his ideas. And is he starting? Well, that doesn't put me on a pedestal, doesn't put him on the lowest rung. We all began somewhere. We all did. We're fortunate to have this kind of conversation. And to think there's resolution, my goodness, not yet. The resolution, it's a process. It's not an outcome. I'll let you know when I get there. I was asked last night to think about freedoms, and I'll share this with you, I think, as an ending, that As I've grown older, I notice that if you asked me this question when I was a young man, I would give you a very forthright answer. You know the kind, big on a large on opinion, not so much on fact. if you've been around me, you know that I prefer the understanding of people with lived experience, who have lived a life, who have been knocked down and had to get up and have experienced the pain. Those are people that I trust. The pious scare the crap out of me. They're always telling me things that make no sense, you know, the way it ought to be. Well, I ought to be a strawberry hanging on a stem on a sunny morning. That's Okay, make me an oak tree. Now, the reality is it is a process, and through your work and your the inspirations and tribulations, it's not always a joke, I learn a great deal about life and about me, and I've realized there are hundreds and thousands of you. Just you're like books, you have stories, and the delight is that you prioritize. It's like curating your curated study. All I have to do is meet you and then listen. It's wonderful. As you grow older, the answers change. Middle age, I would give you a different answer than about freedom and truth. And I tend to think as I get older that the ideas have changed, and I think they've become more enriched. And I no longer am troubled when somebody asks these questions and they roll their eyes because I'm not answering it the way they want to hear. But I tend to think my real answers will come those moments before I move on to the next stage of existence or non-existence or whatever that is. And if you ask me these questions, please do. Maybe on my deathbed. And the answers that I give you, I think, will be the most accurate of all. Anyway, I hope that you've enjoyed the show today as much as we have producing it for you. And I look forward to seeing you again soon. Thanks. Fill in the blank. Here's Arturo Sandoval for you. Bye. Unbelievable. Did you know that?
You guys know how it is when you buy a new Mac, super fast at first and then...
Unbelievable. You know, I was almost out of here. I'll see you soon. Bye.